Hi, you reached out at this point. I can't answer it now, so leave me a message.
Let's try again. She may not recognize, she won't recognize the number.
Yes.
Okay. She may think that.
Hello.
Hi, it's Victoria at the Veterinary Board calling for your informal interview. I've got you on speakerphone. Your attorney is here as well. I'm just going to have you remain quiet until the board chairman addresses you, all right?
Sounds good.
Thank you.
So we are here for section 3, number 1 and 2. This is the time and place scheduled for the informal interview of Dr. Baxter and Dr. Weinzerry. And it's case number 24146 and 2553. This matter will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given to it at ARS 322234. Dr. Baxter, would you please come forward and introduce yourself?
I am Dr. Baxter, the doctor that saw Tanger on this visit.
Great, thank you. And counsel?
Cody Hall. I'm here for Danny Cross here today. And I'm also the counselor, Dr. Weinzerl.
Okay, great. Dr. Weinzerl is on the phone. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, hello, this is Dr. Alexanne Weinzerl.
Great, thank you. You have received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take in this informal interview. As a reminder, those options include dismissal, issuing you a non-disciplinary letter of concern, censuring you, placing your license on probation with terms that may include continuing education and practice restrictions. The board may also suspend your license for up to 30 days, assess a civil penalty, or refer this matter to a formal hearing. The purpose of the informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of the case. The board has read all of the materials that you have submitted. If you have any additional materials you would like to present to the board, please do so now. And we will give Dr. Baxter time first.
Okay. I'm here to answer any questions that you have for me.
Is there anything you wanted to highlight or anything that you would like to talk about first, or then we can go into questions?
I don't think so. I don't think I have much to add.
Okay. All right, so this proceeding is, do I need to read all of that? Yeah. This proceeding is being digitally recorded. As a result, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and that only one person speaks at a time. And fellow board members, I have heard that the court reporter was having a hard time, so I'm speaking, get closer to your microphone. So we'll begin by asking the lead board member assigned to this matter to give a brief summary of the case, and then you'll be given an opportunity to respond. Following your response, the board may wish to ask you some questions. If present, the complainant will also be given an opportunity to address the board. If you have any questions for the board or anyone giving information during this interview, you can ask it through me. All right, so Dr. Thompson, would you like to give your brief summary of the case?
Sure. On April 28, 2024, Tiger, a 1.5-year-old male German Shepherd, was presented to respondent due to non-weight bearing on the right front leg. Complainant reported that she had administered the dog a baby aspirin prior to presentation. Respondent evaluated the dog and recommended diagnostics. Complainant declined due to financial constraints. Respondent offered an injection of pain management and medications to control pain at home. Complainant approved. Respondent reminded the pet owner not to start the NSAID for 48 hours after discharge due to the administration of baby aspirin earlier. The dog was administered an injection of hydromorphone and discharged with carprofen and gabapentin. Complainant stated the dog collapsed after receiving the injection of hydromorphone and was never able to rise. Complainant believes the dog was overdosed due to staff documenting the dog's weight incorrectly. The dog died 1 week later of kidney failure.
So, Dr. Baxter,
Yes.
At this time, I'd like to swear you in. Do you swear or affirm that the evidence you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
And we would now give you an opportunity to respond to the summary. And I think we heard earlier you didn't have anything additional to add. So, okay. Dr. Thompson, do you want to start with questions or?
Sure.
Okay.
So just a couple of clarifying questions. I feel there was a lot of information that was provided in your response and then information from the complainant. Just was curious on your thought process on providing the hydromorphone for the pet.
I felt that hydromorphone was the most appropriate medication that we could have given this dog for acute pain at the time, as it's a mu opioid agonist and works pretty rapidly. And they were going to fill written prescriptions at an outside pharmacy, so I thought that would get them enough time for that medication to work.
And just out of curiosity, in looking at the dosing of the hydromorphone for the pet, I know that there's been a lot of questions around the actual dose, and from what I could see in the documentation, the pet was weighed in at 74 pounds or 33-ish kilograms, is that correct?
Correct, and that all seems consistent through the medical record.
Based on the calculations, when I go back and look, what is your common dose that you like to use your hydromorphone at?
Most of the time I will go with 0.1 mg per kg dose. This dog was acting far more painful than most of my patients, and so I felt a bit of a higher dose at a 0.15 mg per kg dose was appropriate for his level of pain.
Okay. And generally, do you normally opt for the IV route when we're not getting the pet ready for surgery?
I like the IV route because it does tend to minimize the nausea associated with it. Given IM or sub-Q, they will commonly vomit.
And in your experience, have you seen dogs react the similar way that Tiger did to that dosing?
It happens once in a while in our very commonly to be sedate. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they will have even profuse drooling in clinic.
So, but have you witnessed where they acutely fall over or lie down and then they're not able to ambulate?
In some situations, yeah.
And in your practice, is that when those situations arise, what is your normal way of handling those types of situations?
We keep a close eye on them, and if we're usually when we're doing it in hospital, we're getting them ready for diagnostics or procedures or something like that. So we're usually working with them. If they come in acutely painful for a fracture or something like that, we're usually just keeping eyes on them in the treatment area and just monitoring them.
And what would you be keeping an eye on for?
Mainly breathing is our big concern. If there was going to be an overdose type situation, they may stop breathing. That's our biggest concern.
Okay. So if this patient had been in your clinic and he reacted to the medications that way, you would have had staff observing that pet until when?
Until we were either discharging him or going further with the procedure or school.
Okay, so you're comfortable discharging a pet that is in that state?
I was in this case. There wasn't much of an opportunity for us to hospitalize him, unfortunately.
Okay, so given that he was lateral or just recumbent, you were comfortable discharging the pet at that point in time?
This was something my technicians had checked in on him, and they are trained in triage. They're very comfortable with this medication. This is something that I felt these side effects were tolerable given the level of pain this dog had.
Okay. So just to kind of recapture what we discussed, the dosing for Tiger was appropriate based on the weight that you had received. There was also some concerns around having to go back and getting an additional estimate signed for additional drugs. Could you explain that to us, please?
The estimate was originally under what we ended up calculating for the dog's needs, and my best guess as far as why the original estimate did not reflect the dose given, we may not, my assistant may have made that estimate for me and I may have forgotten to adjust it, is one possibility. The other one is that maybe the weight hadn't been written down where I could find it. Our triage techs will usually write it down and they'll enter it when the patient is checked in and we have a place to record it in their chart.
And so with that additional estimate, it wasn't that we were repeating the dose. We were adjusting the estimate based on what medication had already been administered so that that everything was accurate.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Are you aware of a telephone call that occurred later that evening in regards to Tiger?
Not until this letter.
Okay. And out of curiosity, what is the typical shift at your clinic?
My shift is typically 7 to 7.
7 to 7.
A.m. to 7 p.m.
And would that be very similar for your support staff?
Sometimes. Some of them will have, they may start a little bit later or end a little bit later. Some of them may leave a bit earlier. It varies.
Generally, are they 10 to 12 hour shifts for the support staff?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So would it be fair to say if someone was there with you at 8 a.m., that they're likely going to be done with their shift by 8 p.m.?
The majority of the time,
okay. Unless something chaotic happened and. Right. Okay. Just trying to get like time frame when people may be present. That was all for my questions.
A couple questions. Just to clarify, does the hospital have both 2 milligram per mil and 10 milligram per mil hydromorphone?
No. Typically, we carry the 2 mg per mil.
And there was no 10 milligram on the premises at that time.
Not that I'm aware of.
Was that looked into and the drawing up, the recording of it, and it? Who drew it up?
Carly,
that works.
Sure. Carly, my technician, drew up the medication. We keep it in our OmniCell or Cubex, I think is what it is. Mm-hmm. It keeps one vial per box, so it will only open that box. And we keep different concentrations of medications in different boxes, so it will only open the right one. We have a witness required for all opioid medications, all controlled drugs. So another staff member would have had to witness that medication drawn up and make sure she's drawing up the appropriate amount.
Okay. So you're comfortable with that?
I am.
Okay. You said that the reaction of the dog, you explained why it was given IV, would not be that surprising to you. Did you inform owner of the complaint about the possibility of that type of reaction?
We standardly will at time of discharge, and I don't recall if we talked about it beforehand.
What, do you know if your staff would have talked to them about?
They usually will. Carly describes in her statement that she typically does, but also can't specifically remember for this patient.
I'm referring to in this case, the pretty significant sedation that occurred. In reading through seemed to be very surprising and alarming to the owner at that time.
Okay.
So that's the question. Were they told that this could happen?
My staff relayed that this is a typical reaction, that this is something that we can see. But I was at the time, I think that the questions were posed, unavailable to go in at the moment. My staff didn't seem too alarmed about how the patient was looking, so I didn't end up rechecking this patient before he left.
That leads into another question. So when exactly was the last time you were with the patient?
I was with the patient during the initial exam and conversation with the owner. I don't know that I went back into the room after that. I think my assistant had gone over the estimate and my technician gave the injection.
Okay. So you didn't see it after that?
I did not see it.
Were you aware, or when were you aware that he was carried out on the stretcher?
I think as he was being carried out to the car on the gurney.
And that didn't alarm you?
I was not surprised given that but he had been reportedly sedate.
Okay. So, all questions?
I have one. I think it was kind of following on that Dr. Thompson asked about if you were aware that they had called in after about the side effects, and you said you did not know that the phone call had come in.
I do not recall being part of that.
Okay, and were you ever informed that there was, like, I think you just said you saw the gurney being taken out, but did you ever know that these owners were concerned about the state of the dog at that point in time?
I recall the staff reporting they had questions about the sedation, and because I was urgently doing something else, they fielded those questions, and that's about all I knew. I didn't know that there was this level of concern. I didn't know anything about a concern for an overdose or anything like that.
And would it be typical practice for technicians to alert a doctor if an owner has a concern, or are you in that practice if they feel comfortable, they know the answer, they have the freedom to?
We give them some freedom to answer those questions. They're usually pretty adept at answering those questions. And Carly is one of my trusted technicians.
Okay. I don't have any additional questions. Jane, do you have any questions? Jane, can you hear me?
Yes. Sorry, I was muted. No, I don't. Thank you.
Okay. All right, so I think we usually do these as a two-pack. Do you want to take ask the other doctor or finish this first? Well, we have the complaints here, so if we
Go back and forth.
Then we have to go back and forth.
So why don't we speak with the other doctor first, and then the complainant can then respond to both doctors' testimonies.
Okay. So we will move over to the phone and Dr. Weinzerl and attorney. I think we need to reread all of that. Mark, if they heard all the reading from before, do I just have them say their name?
Yes.
Or do I need to swear them in individually?
That would be fine, just state the name.
Okay.
They want to do that.
Okay, so, Dr. Weinzerl, could you state your name for the record?
Dr. Alexanne Weinzerl.
Great, thank you for being here. I think you were able to hear, hopefully you were able to hear how the first part of this went, but Dr. Thompson is the lead on this case, and do you have anything before we get started that you'd like to add?
Not in addition to the written statement I'd already provided.
And can we just... You're representing her?
Correct, I'm representing her, and we have nothing further to submit before the question and answer session.
Would you like to state your name again for the record?
Sure, no problem.
I think I did it earlier, but...
Yeah, that's all right. Cody Hall, Dr. Weinzerl.
Thanks.
I'm getting the evil eye from over here that I didn't do that part. all right, so nothing additional to add. Do you want to start with your questions?
Sure.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, you need to place her under oath. I don't believe she was sworn under oath.
I think you said you could just state their name, but do you want me to redo the quote?
Well, if you want to just place her under oath.
Dr. Weinzerl, at this time, I'd like to swear you in. Do you swear or affirm that the evidence you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Great. Thank you. Okay, Dr. Thompson, you're good to go.
Hello, Dr. Weinzerl. I just had a couple of quick questions. I know, so you are the premise holder of the practice, correct?
Yes.
So I understand that you were not present on the day that Tiger came into the facility. I guess where we have some questions, or I have a couple of questions, is around the complainants stated that they had called
the facility later that evening, approximately 12 hours after Tiger had actually been in and received the injection, and were looking essentially for guidance on what next steps were. So we have the complaint in stating that that phone call was made, but yet it is not evident in any medical record. What is the policy on medical record keeping with client communication?
Our policy is that client calls are documented if it is a client we've seen in the past and have a medical record available for that pet or that owner in terms of recording it. This call was not in the medical record, but we have since the time of this call and in this case reinforced again with our staff what that expectation is and that all documentation of client communication is done in the medical record.
And in the event that we have a client who is communicating with your staff and they do have a concern to that level where you have a pet who is non-ambulatory after receiving a certain level of care that would be considered abnormal that long, besides not having it in the medical record, what would you expect the normal response from your staff to be in regards to a situation like that?
I would expect our response to be that if that client is concerned, our staff is recommending that that pet be reevaluated.
Okay. And then, Dr. Baxter, kind of help me with this, but just if you could reiterate for me, generally speaking, the hours that your staff works, are they're usually longer shifts, right?
They're often sometimes.
Yes, I know. Dr. Baxter had actually giving me some information. I'm confirming with Dr. Wendell.
Oh, okay.
So, because she's the premise holder. So
I heard it differently.
Yes.
I just want to make sure we knew who it was for the recorder.
Yes, so just confirming. So could you briefly explain to us, with emergency hospitals, I know it's a little bit different than our regular practice. Generally speaking, what are shifts do we see with our technical staff?
Is this a question for me, Dr. Weinzierl?
Yes.
Typical shifts for our emergency technicians are going to be either 12 hours or 10 hour shifts.
Okay. So if we had a staff member that was there at 7 o'clock in the morning, they're probably not going to be there at 8, 9 o'clock at night unless there was some sort of emergency that called for OT. Is that a fair statement?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. Those were all the questions that I had.
Any other questions? James, I can't see you. Any other questions? Okay. All right, so I think that concludes this portion of the informal, and we will now hear from the complaint. Thank you for being here. Please state your name.
Jamie T. Miller.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to swear you in. Do you swear and affirm that the evidence you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Great, thank you. Do you have anything to add before we start with questions?
I would like to know if there is a video and audio recorder in those exam rooms.
I would not be.
Can I ask the person, the owner of the facility?
Or
fidelity of what occurred in that room?
I don't think we can ask questions directly from you to them. You have to ask questions through me that might come up in our conversations. So
if it could be recorded that I expressed that question, please, for fidelity of the situation.
Yeah, it'll be recorded that you asked that.
Thank you.
All right, Dr. Thompson, would you like to start with questions?
Sure. Ms. Miller, and I'm sorry for your loss of Tiger. And I'm sure it's been a very difficult situation for you. So to start off, we know we have the records, medical records, how painful he was, and acutely so.
That's inaccurate. I'd expressed this from the moment he entered. Now, mind you, I didn't get the information as to what was written until after he died. It's inaccurate. He walked in. He was not in abject pain. He was whimpering. I was concerned about a festering wound. I expressed I was taking care of a 95-year-old. I was convalescing. I had to make sure for her safety I didn't have a dog that might snap, even though he was of excellent character. He was not in abject pain. He was calm. I did request that he be muzzled for the doctor's safety. That's a professional courtesy. But he was calm. And I even expressed multiple times throughout the whole thing, "You're okay, buddy. We're going out for ice cream afterwards. Just let her check your paw." She felt that it was, she assessed and said there's nothing in the paw. She felt it was growing pains in the shoulder. My response was, "Growing pains in the shoulder? I thought it was only in the long bones." "Oh no, you're wrong." Okay.
Okay, so it, apparently he has some level of pain, maybe.
Not abject, okay. He was uncomfortable.
So you brought your pet in because he was uncomfortable, he had a physical exam.
He was limping, so he was just uncomfortable.
So when, with your complaint, one, you're bringing the complaint forward. There are concerns about the amount of medication that was administered to your pet.
Yes, and from intake, inaccurate information from intake. That he was crying through the night, I did not report that. I said he woke up in the morning. He didn't want to weight bear. And he cried upon weight bearing. He ate a full breakfast. I administered one baby aspirin with breakfast. Dave and I assessed the situation. I said, and he said, "Jamie, he'd been playing in the bulldog all day. It's a UTV, he jumped in and out of it as he was driving. He was an athlete." I was concerned. I said, "Dave, he went out and visited you in your shop. Is there a chance we've got a shard of metal up in that paw? We've got to rule this out. We can't risk it with your mother." I would never, ever waste an emergency vet's time. If I wasn't concerned, my situation was an emergency. It was for the safety and welfare of an elder under my care. And I didn't want it to fester. I couldn't risk it. My vet would definitely accommodate us. He would have handled it 100%. But I didn't want to wait. It was a Sunday. Otherwise, I never would have wasted their time.
Okay. So again, the question is primarily when I'm reading through this, one of your largest complaints and concerns about this visit was the amount of drugs that were administered to the patient.
Correct.
Okay. So I understand that you had heard that they had weighed the dog in kicks. You heard 74 kicks. It was 74 pounds. There were some confusions as far as whether you're talking in kicks and pounds. And then you were also concerned about the volume of the medication that was.
What staff was verbalizing, they presented as very flip, very insincere, very matter of fact. Everything's just handled kind of lackadaisical with an iPad. I don't want to sound like I'm being corrective. I stood at the scale, 74 pounds. At the end, when we're told that we need to sign off so that we can exit, she comes back in. "Oh, in order to exit, I need you to sign this off. We had to double dose him. You know, he's so heavy, 74 kilos. Meantime, I got a dog on the ground begging for a gurney. Dave and I begged for a gurney. We lifted him onto it, as we're told by the two techs. It's perfectly normal, perfectly normal. As we gurneyed him out, I will never forget. I am a medical professional. I'm very aware of things. We were the spectacle. People were cooking out the door from back. The ones standing, or the little girls in the operating the phones. Dave and I'm the one that went into the back seat. The girl, I guess her name was Carly, helped Dave. I held him in my arms in the back seat. I was coated in saliva by the time we got home. This dog couldn't swallow. I did not purchase any of the medications. I did not administer anything. He could not swallow.
And I do understand that you made a phone call in the evening?
Approximately 8:30, it is in my phone. I can describe to you, to the best of my recollection, that phone call. It was quite disconcerting, just like the character and the way these techs behaved when we were there. A tech answered the phone. I introduced myself by my name and the dog's name. I explained, we were there this morning about 7:30. He was injected with a comfort measure, because that's what they kept telling us, it's just a comfort measure. I said, this dog has never gotten up. We have to carry him outside to use the bathroom. He can't even get up to eat. Oh, no, perfectly normal. I remember him. Oh, yeah. And this is what I heard. It was laughter and brevity in her voice, voicing recollection of the spectacle that they got to observe that morning as we took him out on a gurney. No one came to check on him. They just gawked at us.
And after that phone call, you then proceeded to care for him over the evening. And
I was
making sure to keep him as comfortable as you could.
From the phone call, my response was, we will take him to our vet. In which I immediately, of course, now we've got another business day. Upon notifying our doctor, we had to wait. And I called every single day and said, if you have a cancellation call, I'll immediately leave work. We've got a dog that was overdosed. I said, at minimum, double dosed. I said, he looks like Copilot. I was a repeat customer. That's another thing. It's very disconcerting to me as I was sitting in that chair. There is an extensive medical record. I brought my original German Shepherd in, who had been diagnosed with a brain tumor. He had a cerebellar tumor. This practice was highly competent, and they had recommended that he be seen by a veterinary neurologist. We took him to the neurologist. They'd given him an MRI. It was a tremendous tumor. We took him home, and he died with us. He died quickly, mercifully. What was horrible is that after this injection, Tiger behaved just like the dog with the brain tumor. And I'm like, how can this be? It's the same. I'm like, how could lightning strike me twice? What's going on? And I'm in the back of my mind saying, you know, at that point, I didn't know it was Dilaudid. I'm just a speech therapist. And I even told Carly in the room, I don't know my pharmakia. Is this morphine? Is this codeine? That's why I want to know if there was a recording in that room. I point blank asked. And they says, oh, this is what the doctor ordered, just a comfort measure. Okay, back off, Jamie. You're tired. It's okay, it's a comfort measure. In my mind of what I know of human medicine, you don't administer a comfort measure, a narcotic. You go through all kinds of stuff. Okay, let's try Tramadol. Let's try Tylenol. Never a narcotic. It never crossed my mind after direct questions. You can, and I apologize, I mean, I'm not trying. This is the third time I've had to call off work and weld this horrendous nightmare up in my mind.
I'm sorry that you're having to go through this. I don't have any further questions.
So when you called, I think it was, you said
about 8:30. I have it in my phone. I can produce proof.
Yeah, when you called the clinic and the tech answer, did you ask to speak to a doctor at that time?
It was not offered. She was so flip. I mean, like I said, when you have somebody kind of like with laughter in their voice, I just said, I'll be, and my response was, before I hung up, I said, I will be taking him to his doctor. I was not taking him back to that facility.
But that was the only place for care that night?
No.
So
he was to go to his doctor. They told me it was perfectly fine. They told me I was wrong. They told me I was wrong, that it was nothing to be concerned about. Perfectly normal. They remembered him from the morning. It was perfectly normal. And I said, I'll take him to his doctor. Somebody that at least knows him to tell me that this is normal. I wanted somebody who knew the dog.
What were you told exactly about the medication that was about to be administered?
That it was a comfort measure, like hydromorphone, like hydromorphone. That was how she spoke.
So she did tell you what it was?
I didn't know. She did not. I responded, because Dave immediately said, that's too much, because the needle was large. So then I immediately said, what is the derivative? I don't have a pharmacia background. That's where I want to know, was this recorded? I specifically said this, and I'm trying to grapple because I'm not a nurse. I'm not a doctor. I shouldn't be expected to act like one. And I said, what's the derivative? Is it morphine? Is it codeine? And like, it's a comfort measure. The vet, this is what the vet ordered.
Did you have conversations with the doctor regarding what she was going to do?
She told me. She was very brief. It was a very brief encounter. She just said, we're going to give him something to make him comfortable. That was it. She walked out of the room. Nothing from her. From that moment on, it was just a tech coming in and out with an iPad who could barely communicate. Valley girl. Like.
Were you given any side effects to watch for from the medication?
They kept focusing on, he may defecate. And I thought that highly odd that this calm shepherd sitting there who was fully potty trained, I'm thinking, he's potty trained. It's in my mind, I'm just thinking, oh God, you know, you're just kind of like, okay, he's potty trained, like I'm not going to argue with her. But they just got, like that was the big thing. Oh, he might defecate. I'm thinking, defecate? Like comfort measure and you're worried about the dog defecating? He's potty trained. Like I said, it was very lay conversation. What these girls were able to communicate was very lay.
Do you have any questions? No, I do not. Okay, so I think that will conclude this portion of the interview. Thank you again for being here. All right, so do you or counsel have any additional remarks? We
don't have any additional comments, but we do. I mean, closing comments, obviously.
Any questions from the board? So before we move on to deliberations, you have remarks you'd like to make?
Yeah, just a couple of comments.
Okay.
Thank you.
Can we make them clear for which?
Yes. I have them labeled that way, so we'll see if I can do it that way. So, yeah, in regards to the informal interview of Dr. Baxter, 24146, certainly, and again, I'm covering for Danny here today, and I will express Danny's sympathies as well. Passing a vet is always difficult for an owner. The allegations in this case were fully reviewed by the investigative committee and determined that they were not substantiated for unprofessional or dishonest conduct. I think that is telling. I think one of the largest concerns that we've heard here today is there was a concern about overdosing or double the dose. That's just simply not consistent with the records. The records show very clearly that it's a 2.5 milligram dose, which is well within the accepted parameters by the AAHA's anesthesia monitoring guidelines. For a dog, 0.1 to 0.2 intramuscular or IV is well within the accepted standard, giving 1.5 milligrams. Milligram for kilogram, there we go. It's certainly reasonable under the circumstances, particularly in light of the facts of the complaints. A lot of the information that I heard here today from the complainant, I certainly understand memories change, and sometimes they don't get everything in a complaint. The information that there was a discussion about, this was growing pains, and this was in the long bone, that's not included in the complaint, so we obviously didn't have an opportunity to address that at any point in time. In the complainant just simply states that she told them that he had been playing in the shop and they were concerned about a metal shard in the dog's paw and the dog was limping. And so that's what we have obviously focused on throughout this process. The dosing was reasonable and appropriate. It does sound like it was a oral reaction. And again, Dr. Baxter was not working that night when the phone call came in. So I would kindly request the board to dismiss the complaint against Dr. Baxter because she did act reasonably and appropriately. In regard to the companion complaint, if I'm going to call it against Dr. Weinzierl, I also believe that complaint should be dismissed. As the written documentation has confirmed, the practice does in fact have a policy that communication regarding any pet owner is supposed to be documented. It wasn't in this case, and so therefore, Dr. Weinzierl, as she noted in the written response as well, they have done another re-education, they have written another new policy, and they put it out there and reminding everybody of the importance of documenting these conversations. Typically, that type of issue comes up when there's no confirmation of the conversation, but as the complainant has told you today, she has a record on her phone. She also conceded that she was told she could bring Tiger back in, and she chose not to do so. So, to the extent the practice may or may not follow their policy, they did, by the complaints of admission, tell her, you can bring Tiger back in to be seen, and she made the decision not to do so. So I would request as well that the companion complaint against her, yeah, Windsor will be dismissed as well, because again, no substantiation of any unprofessional or dishonest conduct on her part. Thank you.
Dr. Weinzierl, anything last comment from you?
No, I do not have any additional comments.
All right, so this concludes the portion of the informal interview in which the board hears testimony. The board will now deliberate and decide what to do in this matter. Would you like to start the deliberation?
Yes. So, I mean, I feel that after going through the testimony, going through the information that we have, I know that a big chunk of this complaint was around the volume of medication that was dispensed to the pet. And as we go back and we look, and there may have been other folks that have stated the weight incorrectly, but the medical record reflected a correct weight. The amount of drug that was dispensed reflected a correct calculation based on the correct weight of the pet. And so it's difficult to say that this was a double dose or incorrect dose. All of the math and all of the records show that it was a correct dose. Now, nobody's disputing that the dog had some horrible reaction. Like, he responded much greater than what we probably would have anticipated him responding to, but we can't necessarily, you know, but those are things that happen. It's still a question as to why it had such a profound effect on him. I think the other piece, you know, Tiger ended up, his demise was kidney failure, and that's not generally a sequela to hydromorphone. So it really lends to the question on what led to that. Because that's not something that we see with that medication. Even if it was overdosed, that's not what we would see based on that. So I would tend to agree with the investigative committee and find no violation in this case, 24.146. That will open for discussion.
My concern is about some of the communication that occurred. The staff, and therefore indirectly the respondents' reaction to this adverse reaction. I mean, we are all sitting here hearing this story, and as you just said, that was a horrible reaction. Reacted very adversely, but my concern is the reaction of the staff to that.
Right,
how about, he's really having a bad reaction. We need to watch him for a while.
That's the issue I have is you're sending this dog home on a gurney. That is having a hard time swallowing, can't walk, and came in, particularly walking and with it. Mm-hmm. So like, if you have that significant of a change, whether it's due to an overdose or not, or whether it's just a side effect of the medication that you didn't expect, or what, doesn't matter to me what that is. There's some level of monitoring that needs to happen, or at least be recommended to the owner, as we can keep him here, because I think most owners would not want to take that on and feel comfortable at home with a dog that can't walk and can't walk.
Right, and I didn't know if that fell under the premise.
Well, that's right.
Because that's training of the staff, right? And so the respondent, Dr. Baxter, wasn't alerted to the fact that this was a significant issue.
Well, Dr. Baxter did say she knew we went out on a
group. Yeah, okay. We asked her that.
Yeah.
And she said.
And she was in another urgent matter, so she didn't talk to them, which I understand, this is an emergency practice, but she did see the dog walk on the gurney, and I questioned, you know, myself, and I'm like, if that had been me, would I be okay with my technicians releasing one of my patients on a gurney that came in walking that I didn't expect to leave on a gurney? It would make me go, wait, what's going on here? Why is this happening?
Or at the very least, how about some communication with the client saying, yeah, this is a problem. This is a severe reaction, and we're concerned about it. And if you want to take them home, this should wear off fairly quickly, and give them a time frame so they can understand what, at the very minimum, they didn't even get back. They didn't get any instruction about what to do with this dog.
They had time to watch for that it might be getting worse.
So I didn't watch for it getting worse, exactly.
That's my concern.
Well, I'll rescind my motion. We can work on, because I don't disagree. I guess I was having more of a problem on that communication in which respondent it fell under.
If
so.
It's just communication, then is that a violation or not? And that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Just a couple other points, just for clarification, it's entirely appropriate, excuse me. To cite growing pains can be in the shoulder. So they're both correct. Yes, it's in the long bones. However, the proximal humerus is the long bone that hurts when you palpate the shoulder from pain osteitis. So, the complainant just basically wanted the clock checked out. And I think it's reasonable to decline further. Diagnostics at that point. That wasn't made a point, but I don't want it to sound like it's complaint. Just said, no, I'm not going to do that.
Right.
He's fine. I just, wanted his paw checked out. I am concerned about the complainant not understanding what was being given to him.
Especially since these comments, it was a big amount. We can't have any more comments.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm here.
All she was told was it was comfort. And then she brought up, is this a narcotic? And then they said, well, yeah, it's like comfort. Is that not a cause for concern if you're going to administer an opioid to a dog and the client doesn't know that you're administering an opioid? Their dog.
Well, I guess I would go back to the estimate.
What, but even if it's a hydromorphone on there, I don't know that an owner would be expected to know what that is. I don't know that I would necessarily say I would have gotten to that level of detail. I think when an owner asks, then yes, you need to tell them more. Clearly they're interested in what drug and what are the, you know. So yes, you need to answer it then, but in those everyday cases, I'm not sure most owners that I would see wouldn't necessarily ask. They would assume it was medication for pain, and I don't know that mine usually
asks. Yeah, and it's partially hindsight because they gave an IV and it got hit the floor. Mm-hmm. So
right.
Yeah, so it's hindsight in that. Okay, so yeah.
I mean, mine really is strictly around the fact that this dog clearly had a reaction that was not necessarily expected. And yes, it could occur, but not necessarily expected. And definitely not expected by the owner. And we sent the dog home and didn't give a lot of communication on what to watch for, or what we expect, or how long we expect it to wear off, or, I mean, she's still calling back in at 8:30 at night. Like, this is a long time. So I guess that's, that would be mine, and I would probably say professionally acceptable procedures.
So
sorry, I didn't hear the latter part of that.
Oh, sorry, Jane. I was saying that I think my concern is more around the condition of the document communication with the owner when the adverse reaction happened, and that would probably, to me, it would not be professionally acceptable procedures. I think the one thing here, too, just to call out is whether this falls to the premise holder or whether this is a veterinarian that treated. If the veterinarian that had treated the dog was never made aware that there was a problem, then I would say, okay, she would have no way of doing this. But she said she saw the dog leave laundry, and that's why I'm like, and if she wasn't told there was a problem, she saw there was a problem, and she didn't inquire. So I think just for clarification, that's where I was coming from. Mm-hmm.
And as we've had other cases, and especially the case of non-CBTs, respondent is responsible for what occurred, and this is a case where the doctor left and now everything was communicated to, and questions and answers to all the staff. So.
And it's a tough situation because it's like doctors do this every day. They do this, they depend on their technicians to know when to alert them, they do this every day. But in this case, I think the technicians did not alert her to a problem, and she saw that this was going on and didn't ask about it. And ultimately, even if she didn't ask about it, she's still responsible for the fact that the technicians allowed this dog to go out like that without any communication about it.
And then followed up to have it a problem 8 hours later. That is also the staff communication. Whose responsibility is that at that point? Now, is that the responsibility, or is that the responsibility? It's two separate things.
Yeah, I feel like we should finish this one first and then touch that one, because it does have a different nuance.
Right.
So do you want to make the motion?
I can. So I would make a motion that we find a violation of 32, 22, 32. Number 12, is that released to R311501? For using professionally acceptable procedures with regards to communication of the owner to the owner about the condition of this dog and the side effects that were being seen and what to expect at the time of the checkout.
One second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Yeah. Dr. Byrne, will you do a roll call?
Dr. Byrne, aye. Dr. James?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
And Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Okay.
So then for case 2553, we're having more discussion around the communication piece and the expectations of the staff and their role of communication.
I don't know what else we need to say.
I mean, I think we've had this discussion before, but this to me is irresponsible, but in my mind is responsible for making sure that there's a policy in place that says it's documented in a medical record and an owner calls in, and the level of knowledge that the technicians should and when they should alert and when they shouldn't alert. Like that's what's set by the responsible vet. Whether that actually happens or not is where I start to get kind of iffy, because the responsible vet in my mind can only do so much. They can only set what should happen, and then it could. I mean, I don't know that they can actually be accountable to every single technician in that hospital following the policy at every single point in time. I know we've had this discussion before and others disagree, and maybe it was part of just being a responsible vet, but I feel like in this case, the responsible vet had a policy in place, the clinic had a policy in place, and it didn't happen, but is that really her fault? The policy was there. And it's been reiterated and re-communicated just like I would have expected based on something like this.
Chair, isn't the responsible veterinarian responsible for the training of the technicians or whoever's answering the phone to be able to do the appropriate initial triage?
I think that, in my mind, I don't know that this is a black and white answer, but...
Do you have concern about the initial triage?
I don't think in the initial triage, but I think the technicians that answer the phone or were answering the questions at the 8:30 call, then, yes, I mean, I think the responsible vet helps set the practice up for when do you alert a doctor versus when can you make the call. And I think that I felt like I heard that was in place, but the wrong decision was made. And I just don't know how a responsible vet can be responsible for 20 plus people running around a clinic always doing the right thing. Like, there's some level of, you have, the standard for the responsible vet has to be that you've actually put the right policy in place.
Right.
And I feel like that part is done. But it's a hard one.
Well, at least by our discussion, there may be some merit to that, whether we think that's a violation for the responsible vet. I think the conversation is appropriate and may provide something of value.
Yeah, and I don't know these technicians. I mean, we heard that this is a very seasoned and good technician. I don't know about the ones that were all involved, right? But it doesn't sound like we have a group of technicians that were like, brand new, that shouldn't have been doing this. It didn't sound like that to me. It felt like it may not have been handled in the way it wanted from the technician standpoint, but not necessarily for the technician.
So at this point, can we ask the respondent anything, just a question, to help us with this, with the staff? Can I ask another question?
You can hold it up if it's necessary.
Dr. Baxter,
is it Dr. Baxter?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Dr. Baxter. Are you aware? Were you aware of these conversations? Are you satisfied with the communications between the staff members involved in this? Were you satisfied with that communication? Now, looking back in retrospect, do you believe these staff members in their communication with the client was appropriate and you're satisfied? You have no problems with it.
I am not satisfied with whoever took the evening call.
The evening call.
For sure.
So that in your mind is a problem.
That is a problem in my mind. I don't want to know about that.
There's the respondent. And it's her case. She's not satisfied with that. So if that bears has any weight on our discussion, I wanted to hear that.
Well, yeah, and I think you would hear that from the responsible vet, too,
right. That
they didn't document the way the policy was written, and they have reinforced that policy. But does that mean there's a violation on behalf of the responsible vet?
Let me expand it just a little bit. How about in the exam? Satisfied communications between the staff and the client in the exam?
I don't know exactly what conversations they had, but
they relayed to you.
What they relayed to me was that they seemed to have answered all the questions. They weren't concerned.
Thank you.
We're kind of done with Dr. Baxter. We're just now really thinking about, I think that's the color that we're thinking about now.
That's where I'm going.
I feel like this practice has the policies in place and they were not followed. And I don't know if I can say that I feel like that's the responsible vet's job to always, to even when they're not there, not present, not a part of the case, be able to control what that staff does. I just don't know how that's a realistic